Hey friends, welcome to The Drivecast, a daily podcast designed to help us read it in, pray it up, and live it out. My name's Dan, and I serve as the teaching pastor for our Worthington campus. Today, we're continuing in this series called I Have Questions, and the teaching pastors are kind of recapping some of the things that we talked about in our messages last weekend. If you were there that Sunday or have been listening to the Drivecast this week, you know we were teaching through Exodus chapter 3, verses 7 through 11. And this is a notoriously tricky passage. And one many of us, if we've read through the scriptures before, we have some pretty honest questions about this passage. And it revolves around Moses, Pharaoh, and God. And what you see happen in Exodus chapter 7 through 11 is God seeming to manipulate Pharaoh's heart or harden his heart. Let me read the passage and then we'll start to explore some of these things. This is Exodus chapter 7, starting in verse 1. I'm just going to read a longer section. It says this: "And the Lord said to Moses, 'See, I have made you like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet. You shall speak all that I command you, and your brother Aaron shall tell Pharaoh to let the people of Israel go out of his land. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and though I multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt, Pharaoh will not listen to you.'" Now, as you've caught on to by now, the real challenge is, how do we understand this process of God hardening Pharaoh's heart? I know that we've heard from all the other teaching pastors this week on how we have to understand this phrase in context with the rest of what is talked about in this section. We've probably seen already that about 14 times something is said to have happened to Pharaoh's heart. Right? Four times it's talked about God as hardening Pharaoh's heart. Four times Pharaoh seems to harden his own heart. And the rest of it, just something happens to Pharaoh's heart. We're not really sure if it's Pharaoh who does it or God who does it. And I think what we have already heard is that God has not so much got into Pharaoh's heart, manipulated and twisted his actions and outcomes, but he's kind of set things up in such a way, knowing that Pharaoh will respond by hardening his own heart, right? We've seen some of that play out. But the reason this question is so challenging for us, right? And we've talked about what it means for God to have that type of power over somebody, to know them well enough that he can arrange the details of Pharaoh's life and the experiences, knowing that this is going to result in Pharaoh hardening. So, like, what does it mean for God to have that level of power? The word that we used at Worthington is sovereignty. We talked about God's sovereignty. And really, sovereignty has three components that all work together. You need all three. And if you don't have all three, you really don't have sovereignty, right? God's sovereignty means that he has, one, a plan. Two, he has a commitment to that plan. Like, he's going to follow through. He's not going to back off or get distracted or move on to something else because the plan gets too hard. And number three, he has the ability or power to bring about his plan, right? This is really the holistic story that the Bible is telling from beginning to end, creation to restoration. God's story is of him creating a people, drawing them, redeeming them, freeing them, and restoring them. Like, he has a plan. I think we see this perfectly articulated in the book of Revelation, that he will set the world right. Right? He will one day make it so there is no more pain, no more sorrow, no more mourning, no more evil. It is all gone away with. This is God's holistic plan. And in his sovereignty, he has a commitment to his plan, which means we can trust that he will absolutely bring about what he says he will do. Like, God's commitment to his own plan, to his own word, means that whatever we encounter in this life, we can trust and know that we know that we know he will still be faithful. And the third piece of God's sovereignty is that he has the ability. He is able to bring about his plan. He will not fail. All right, we spent a lot of time talking about this at LifePoint Worthington, but I think there's another component as we start to navigate, like, where else does God do this? Where might he do this? Set things up in a way to bring about a specific type of conclusion, right? And I think that this leads into a lot of gray areas of human experience, things we don't really know exactly how to make sense of. Broadly, we know that there are questions that we find in the Bible that we don't always have great black and white answers to. There's a lot of gray area. And as I've been reflecting on that, rather than trying to smooth this out really in all of these questions in this series and say they're not really that challenging at all, what I want to do, and what we did a little bit in the message, is talk about how the complexity of God's word and his character is not something for us to be afraid of. It's actually something for us to lean into. It's an incredible quote by pastor, theologian, and author Henry Nouwen, in talking about spiritual formation, how we become more like Jesus. He says this: spiritual formation begins with the gradual and often painful discovery of God's incomprehensibility in the face of life's great mysteries and limitations. We might be competent in many subjects, but we cannot become an expert in the things of God. God is greater than our minds and cannot be caught within the boundaries of our finite concepts. Ultimately, he uses this to talk about a formerly well-known phrase among Christians, but has really been forgotten and totally unused in the modern era. But it's the Latin phrase, docta ignorantis, meaning that there is a basically divine unknowing about God. Meaning there are things we do not know about him. He cannot be and will not be confined to our own understanding. And I know that that is frustrating, but ultimately, I think this leads us to a greater worship and reflection on God's ultimate sovereignty as one who is far bigger and far greater than we can possibly confine in our own minds. There's a line in C.S. Lewis's great allegory, The Christian Life, The Chronicles of Narnia, and you know the story. It follows three kids who go into the land of Narnia, and they have encounters with Aslan, who represents Jesus throughout the story. And one of the characters is explaining to the kids what Aslan is like. And he has this great line where he essentially says this right at the end. He says, "People who have not been in Narnia sometimes think that a thing cannot be good and terrible at the same time," right? And C.S. Lewis, as an Englishman, is using it in the English sense of the word terrible, meaning awe-inspiring power. So really what he's saying is people who have not been in Narnia sometimes think that a thing cannot be good and unbelievably powerful at the same time. And yet this, both of these things are absolutely true of who God is. He is good and all-powerful in the same time and in the same place. And this key aspect of God's character, that he is good, is the thing that allows us to trust his sovereignty, even if we don't fully understand what he's doing, why he's doing what he's doing, or what he may be allowing us to experience in this season. What we take to the bank is not just that God is all-powerful, not just that he is sovereign, but that he is good. Friends, I encourage you to take a moment and reflect, not just on God's power, but his goodness. How is he good to you? Thanks for tuning into the Drivecast. We'll see you back here tomorrow.